Blog Talk Radio.
A licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manapro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. Manapro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Raising Chickens. My co-host is poultry advocate and author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles, Pat Foreman. Today is Wednesday, August 31st, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at several places. At our website, chickenwhisperer.com, that's chickenwhisperer.com, and on Twitter, and of course on Facebook. You can go to just facebook.com/The Chicken Whisperer. But of course, if you just go to our website, chickenwhisperer.com, it'll have links to all of those other places where you can get valuable information about the radio show and keeping backyard poultry. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I want to invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other backyard poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the world. Yes, I mean from around the world. We have listeners all over the planet. You can also ask any questions you may have for your special guest when we have them on. All you have to do now, folks, if you're listening live right now, you're already in the chat room. The chat room's probably already open. Just scroll down a little bit on your computer. You'll see the chat room. You may be logged in already as a guest automatically, but take a moment to click on that register button. Register here. Take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can actually participate in the chat, talk with folks, ask questions for our guests, and definitely meet some new friends. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manapro. Manapro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that Manapro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. Manapro, nurturing life. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size, flock, and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com.
Mm-hmm.
pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is hump day. It's hump day. It is Wednesday. Now, you're not allowed to say that in the OBGYN office. You're not allowed to. That's the only place on the planet you can't say it's hump day. But other than that, anywhere else, it is hump day today, Wednesday. We're halfway through the work week, and I hope you're enjoying it. We've got 2 days until another fun Friday and another awesome weekend. We've got a great guest lined up for you today, thanks to my co-host, Pat Foreman. And so let's just go ahead and give her an absolutely wonderful, wonderful, wonderful welcome. My co-host for today, the wonderful author of City Chicks, Chicken Chapter, other great titles, Compost Queen herself, and Prius Lover. Pat Foreman, yep, absolutely. When I met you up in Virginia, Pat, that was a great time, but you giving us a ride back to our bed and breakfast from that restaurant. We pulled up to that red light and stopped, and I was like, did you cut off the engine? What's going on? I don't hear anything. What's the deal? Do I need to get out and push?
Oh, that's right. You know, with that Prius, it only uses gasoline when it needs to move. And I can be traveling down the interstate at 75 miles an hour, and all I hear is the wind in the tires. There's no gas being used at all sometimes. So it's a wonderful car.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, it was pretty neat. That was the first time I had ever ridden in one. And I must say, it was a pretty neat vehicle. It's neat. I was impressed. I must say. So, and it fits you perfectly. It sure does.
Well, it has changed my driving patterns, you know, because there's that little information panel display there, which tells you how much gas you're using and whether the battery's being recharged or the wheels are recharging the battery. And so it's totally no heavy feet in my car. Because I know how to get I want to get the very last drop of oil I possibly can or gasoline when I do drive. So it gets a pretty consistent 49-50 miles per gallon, which is really helpful these days.
You better believe that. Hey, Bard Rock in the chat room says, I forgot one of your titles, which would be Compost Queen. I can't forget that. And changing the world one compost bin at a time. That's my co-host, Pat Foreman.
Or just employing chickens as biomass recyclers. And in a way, it's more efficient than composters. And then you can save feed to boot. So it's an exciting time when it comes to building local topsoils and then enhancing local agriculture. Of course, that's my true passion, too. Wow.
Hey, well, yeah. I've got fairly lengthy chickens in the news that I want to read. I think it's very important. Let me see. Hang on just a second. Get over here to my Facebook. There was something that I was going to I'll read maybe two chickens in the news, but one's very lengthy. But, you know, we've had a gentleman, I think Andy in Sacramento, who who's been on and talking about how I think it was yesterday that was the final meeting. And so I do have some good news there. He may be listening out in Sacramento. This comes to us from the Sacramento Press. City chicken ordinance passed by city council. This comes to us from Dora Brome. And scroll down a little bit, and it is a little lengthy. I'm just going to read a portion of it. The City Council of Sacramento passed the backyard henkeeping ordinance after nearly 2 years of discussion. Mm-hmm. Ready for this? In an 8-0 vote. It was absolutely 8-0 on Tuesday night. The ordinance, set to take effect November 1st, will allow people within city limits to keep up to, ready for this? This is amazing, 3 hens.
Oh.
I mean, you know, come on, they got to start somewhere, and then what they can do is after a year or two, they can use their own city's information against them and go and say, look, well, you know, 3 hens, you know, thank you for that. It's been 2 years. We've pulled the reports. We did an information request, and look, in 2 years, we've had only 4 complaints about chickens. Those happen to be illegal roosters. The problem was taken care of, but you've had 19,000 complaints about dogs. So we would really like to see if we could change it up to 6 chickens. But at least they got this passed. 3 hens is a start. And as long as the enclosure is 20 feet away from the nearest neighboring residence and a license fee of $10 per household and permit fee of $15 per chicken is paid annually. And, of course, it has a link to the actual ordinance that you can read, which is very good. After 18 members of the community spoke in support of the council adopting the ordinance and 2 in opposition, all members of the council voted in favor of adopting the ordinance except 1, Councilman Daryl Fong, who was not present at the meeting due to a family vacation. Councilwomen Angelique Ashby, Sandy Seedy, and Bonnie Pinnell said they still have concerns about passing the ordinance, but they will pass it, holding their caution, and check back in 6 months. So, and they'll see that in most all cases, just like the city of Longmont, when the city actually came out and said, hey, what's the big deal? You know, everybody was in this uproar passing it here in Longmont, and after a couple of years, it's been a non-issue. We haven't seen even one problem that people were yapping about or talking about on the opposition side, and it's a non-issue. This is great. I don't know. People made a mountain out of a molehill. So another city across America, congratulations, Sacramento, allowing you're working hard to get your council to pass an ordinance to allow backyard chickens, and so you can also start down this wonderful road of sustainability and composting and not filling the landfill with food waste and just having a wonderful pet in your backyard. So that's one short one I wanted to share with you. I've already have that posted on our Facebook page. One I have not yet posted on our Facebook page, which I still have in my email box. If you'll give me a second, I'll get over to get over to this as the chat room is slowly but surely filling up. I want to say hello to everybody in the chat room. Let me go ahead in this and talk about a fiasco. Lehigh Acres. This comes to us from the LehighAcresCitizen.com. This actually is a guest opinion in their publication. I don't know if it's a published or if it's online, but this comes to us from the guest opinion portion of this this news article or this newspaper. Guest opinion. Here we go. This comes to us from Stan Damon. Stan Damon. You know, part of me wants to get him and have him on the radio show. End this chicken backyard growing fiasco in Lehigh. In this chicken backyard growing fiasco in Lehigh. So let's see how we can tear this apart here a little bit during Chickens in the News. I am writing on behalf of the hundreds of members in the Country Club Estates Association that are overwhelmingly opposed to the keeping and or raising of chickens in an established residential neighborhood. CCEA is not a snobbish group, as our name may suggest to some. The entrance to our deed-restricted, not gated neighborhood is located across the street from the original Admiral Leahy Golf Course, hence the name. We are a community of concerned residents trying to maintain our properties by cooperation, not confrontation. The rules are simple and explicit. Please visit us and see for yourselves. Our neighborhood is fully developed and consists of about 600 individual parcels of one-quarter acre lots. Only a few remain vacant. The diversity of CCE is evident by the ethnic backgrounds of our residents. Our welcome mat is extended to all who want to live in a deed-restricted area. Do not force us to lower our standards to accommodate one or two individuals who want to raise or keep farm animals. Okay, this will start right here. He's saying his community's not snobbish, but he's having to spend two or three paragraphs trying to defend why they're not snobbish. So that right there tells you something's up with that, trying to defend what they say they're not. Number two, do not force us to lower our standards to accommodate one or two individuals who want to raise or keep farm animals. So they're having to, I'm wondering what, if he could go into more elaboration about that, lowering their standards, okay? People in million and multi-million dollar homes keep backyard poultry and some of the finest subdivisions across this great land. The big cities, New York, Atlanta, now Sacramento, LA, some of the most influential people, movie stars that live in million, multi-million dollar homes keep backyard poultry. So I'm not sure exactly what he's trying to refer to when he says they would have to lower their standards to accommodate one or two individuals who might want to raise or keep farm animals. So there's my first 2 cents worth. Many of us in our earlier lives lived or worked on or near farms. Okay, let's stop there. Let's address this one at a time. We're not talking about a farm, Stan, okay? We're talking about 4 to 6 chickens. Sacramento just passed 3 chickens. 3 chickens does not come close to meeting the definition of a farm, you doofus, okay? So we're talking about 3 chickens, okay? So the fact that you may have grown up on a farm with cows and goats and chickens and many dogs and many cats and acreage of corn and everything else, that does not mean that's what you're going to have next to you. You saw Sacramento passed a law for 3 chickens. So number one, it's a moot point. And because many of us worked or lived near farms, that is the reason we now choose to live in a residentially zoned neighborhood. We bought in good faith and paid a premium for it. Okay, now he's saying he's not snobby, but he's saying he's making point that he paid a premium price to live where he lives. No one I have spoken with is against raising farm animals in agriculturally zoned spaces. There are basically 2 choices that can be made. Number one, abandon all Lee County zoning ordinances and allow all landowners to do whatever they want on their properties. As we all know, this would result in utter chaos. Now, I think this is funny. So number one, there are 2 solutions here. He's saying number one is just allow homeowners to do whatever they want to on their property. How unique is that? That would result in utter chaos. So abiding by the Constitution, this is my property. I own this property. I pay taxes on this property. Don't you think under the Constitution I should be able to do whatever the heck I want to do on my property? Okay. Now, let me make a point here. In many communities, whether it be cities or counties or whatever, when they pass this law, in a lot of cases, the law, when they pass it as, say, a county ordinance or a city ordinance, it does not, in most all cases that I've seen, will not override a homeowners association covenants. So he's got to understand that as well. If the city he lives in, if the county he lives in, here Lee County, passes this and says chickens are available, you've got the state laws, you've got county laws, you've got city laws, then you have the homeowners association almost Nazi type laws in many, many cases, and people who have that power hunger once they get on the board of the homeowners association. It's crazy. So if you live Stan in a homeowners association that has its own covenants, then that would, in most all cases, override, even if the county does allow keeping a backyard poultry. So he says there's only two choices. One, to just let landowners do whatever they want on their property. Interesting. Well, I don't see a problem with that. Choice two, follow the ordinances currently in effect that have evolved and have been enacted by the wisdom of your predecessors. They knew single residents as farm animals don't belong together. The ordinances were enacted to preclude or solve problems, not to create more. We must deal with the facts and not emotions. Okay. Oh, hang on. Let me get my spot here. We must deal with the facts and not emotions in the issue. Before any changes are made to the current ordinances, the following questions and many others must be carefully answered while looking into the future. Okay, here we go. He's got a whole list of things here. How will Lee County commissioners deal with the decreased tax revenues sure to result when assessments plummet if farm animals are permitted in residentially zoned neighborhoods? Okay, Stan, let's cover number one here. Show me the proof. Show me anywhere on the freaking planet where home values have decreased, either officially, like having the assessment fall because someone has three chickens in their backyard, or because maybe someone is trying to buy a home in a neighborhood that happens to allow backyard poultry. Stan, show me the proof. Number one is moot. If you can show me one case anywhere on the planet where someone received $10,000 for their home because a neighbor kept backyard chickens or the county the home was being sold in allowed backyard chickens, then we'll address this. But the number one you have here is moot. Goodbye. Okay, let's cover number two.
Good. Very good, Christopher.
What damage will be done to Lee County's tourist destination image? Does Lee County want to be known as the friendliest chicken county between Tampa and Miami? I don't see why not. It would be pretty awesome because based on 85 to 90% of the cities that are approaching to allow backyard chickens do, just like we saw with Sacramento, that you'll be up and coming as well with the rest of the country and the other cities that are passing this law. So what damage will be done to the tourist destination? Pat, I'm 42 years old. I know I have a lot of listeners that are older than me. We have a lot of listeners that are younger than me. I will tell you firsthand that I have never planned a vacation in my entire life where I had researched chickens were allowed in the freaking county or beach or neighborhood or destination I was going to. So I don't normally, when I go to Travelocity, I don't think they have a little pop-up that says, "Warning! This destination allows backyard chickens. You may want to pick your destination for your family vacation." Okay? So this is absolutely a ridiculous and moot point. What damage will be done to the tourist destination image? I'd like to know in the chat room. I'm not in it right now. But how many of you, anybody out there, call me if you want to. Email me if you've ever, when you're planning your vacation, have seen a pop-up at your travel agent's website or your travel agent has said, "Oh, wait, by the way, you may not want to stay here because they allow backyard chickens in that community." Okay, how ridiculous and stupid is that, Stan? Okay, next. What about our winter residents? Snowbirds coming from the north. Okay, what about our winter residents, both national and international, that are not here right now to express their views on the matter? Well, they see their investment being eroded, and many will want out. That's not a good image to project. Okay, so all these snowbirds that come down from Yankeeville to go down to Florida and spend the winters, hey, that's fine. More power to them. But again, this has to do with values. I'm sure these retired folks that are coming down to spend the cold winters in Florida, I mean, show me the proof. Again, Stan, show me where values have dropped because of backyard poultry was allowed. Show me where someone couldn't sell their house. I want factual information. I want true documentation where someone got $10,000 less for their house right now, bottom line. Okay, how would the commissioners keep the odor and flies and other chicken nuisances from the neighboring one-quarter acre parcels? That's an impossibility. Okay, Stan, I'm going to ask you a question. Have you ever in your entire life lived next to somebody that had 3 to 6 chickens? Maybe we'll even increase that number to 12. Have you ever yourself kept 3 to 12 chickens in your backyard? Have you ever lived next to somebody that had 3 to 12 chickens? You may have grown up on a doggone chicken farm that had 90,000 chickens, okay? We're not talking about 90,000, Stan. We're talking about 3 to 12. Do you have personal experience? Do you have somebody in your family, or do you even know somebody that lived right next door to somebody that kept 3 to 12 chickens in their backyard? If not, you have no idea what the heck you're talking about. Okay, let's talk about odor. We've gone down this time blue in the face. Okay, we've had people, we've had authors, we've had reporters standing in the backyards, right in the run of these chicken coops, doing stories on backyard chickens, and their first comment is, they're quiet, I hear nothing, and I smell nothing. Okay, so we're not talking about 90,000 chicken stands, we're talking about 9. So odor, give me a break. I'm sure there's a lot of dog kennels in your 600 home little subdivision there that smell a lot worse than 3 to 6 chickens would ever will. Why, Pat? Let's go ahead and tell Stan the difference between the amount of dog poop and chicken poop. Why don't we? Go ahead, Pat. Tell us the difference between 6 chickens and dog.
Yeah, well, 1 40-pound dog, Whisper, produces about 2/3 of a pound of poop every day, solid waste poop, whereas 10 chickens produce less than that. It's about a little over half a pound. So 10 chickens produce less manure, fertilizer in the case of chickens, and poop in the case of dogs, because you can use the chicken manure, of course, in your compost or to fertilize your yard. So there you have it. That's the fact.
There you go, Stan, and talking about factual information here. Okay, other chicken nuisances. How are the commissioners going to keep all this down? Well, Stan, it's called ordinances that are already in place. I assure you, Stan, that there are already plenty of laws on the books there where you live to deal with any possible far-reach problem that could come with the neighbor that has 6 to 12 chickens. For example, what if a dog gets loose at 3 a.m. and is running the neighborhood? Well, what if a chicken gets loose? What's the difference? Okay, I'll end with that comment here in just a moment. Okay, number 5. Moot point there, Stan. Okay, 5. How would the commissioners handle the slaughter of farm animals on 1/4-acre residential lots? That's the reality of farming when animals no longer produce. Okay, you need to do your research a little bit more, Stan, okay? Number 1, in most all cases, I would say 95% of all the towns that allow backyard poultry put in a non-kill, non-cull clause regarding that. I personally don't agree with that. I understand it, but I personally don't agree with that because then the government is controlling my food source and controlling a way that I can choose to feed my family, whether it's good times, bad times, end times, whatever. Okay, so I personally have a problem with that, but I get that. But in most cases, and probably in your town too, there would be a no slaughter, no kill clause in the ordinance, like probably 95 to 98% of the ones that are passed across America now. So that would be a new point because it would not be allowed to begin with. These people, the majority of them, the backyard folks, want eggs. Okay, you don't have to kill your chickens to get eggs, okay? Duh. Okay, so that's the key there. Plus, there's a lot more. What happens when they no longer produce? You kill them. Nope, not with chickens, my friend. Because you forget, you're concentrating, Stan, because you didn't do your research on egg-producing chickens. And then once they stop laying, they're no longer useful. You got all that wrong. You need to do more research, Stan. Okay. Once they stop laying, by that time, of course, they are pets. Just because your dog is too old to play catch or fetch, and your dog has now hip problems and can't fetch, are you going to go ahead and kill your dog because it can't run across the yard and bring the ball back to you? Are you going to kill your dog because of that? No. Just because your chicken can no longer lay, you still have the compost capabilities, the fertilizer capabilities, the pet capabilities. So it's not an issue of, oh, they're not laying now, let's go ahead and kill them and slaughter them in the backyard. Do some more research, Stan, and then rewrite your article, okay? Okay. How would the commissioners handle the manure problem on 1/4-acre lots? Chicken manure cannot be applied directly to plants. It must first be composted. If this is not done properly, the resulting odor and flies would choke the neighborhood. Okay, just like Pat said, I don't know how many dogs are in your 600-home neighborhood, but I assure you, even if this is passed, there'll be a heck of a lot more dogs and menacing cats and probably some menacing kids, too, that are going to cause more problems than the two or three or four people that might want to get backyard chickens and have three or four chickens in your backyard. We just talked about dogs having much more poop than chickens, and you can't do a doggone thing with cat poop or dog poop. Okay, cat poop, they're going to poop in your flower, your neighbor's flower beds. Cats are going to walk all over your car and scratch it and leave prints all over it. Dogs, hey, how many stories do we hear? Two dogs killed my goats, okay? Dogs kill kids all the time, okay? I've never heard where a hen, because in most cases, most ordinances will eliminate and not allow roosters. I've never heard where a hen actually pecked a child to death. I've never heard where you know, so give me a break there, Stan. So that's moot. That's a moot point there, my friend, regarding the manure issue. If you have a compost bin, you can put that in the composter, and it's still less poop than your neighbor's dog poop that you can't do anything with. Okay? Number 7. What about vermin? Chickens eat grain. Rodents eat grain. Snakes eat rodents. Raccoons, possums, and bobcats eat all of the above. This is what awaits us if the commissioners allow chickens into residential neighborhoods. Okay, do some more research, Stan. I'm going to educate you here on something, okay? Number 1, yep, chickens do eat chicken feed. Dogs eat chicken feed, or dog feed, and cats eat cat feed. How many of your 600 homes keep a dog bowl outside on the back deck? How many? That's what I want to know. How many keep a chicken bowl or cat food bowl on the back deck? That's my next question. Okay, let's compare apples to apples here. Okay, let's talk about rodents here. Okay, rodents are attracted to food and water source, whether it's from chickens or dogs, cats or humans or whatever else it may be. So let me give you some clarity here, Stan, since you didn't research before you wrote all of this. Okay. How many people, Stan, in your 600-home neighborhood have wild bird feeders in their front or backyard? Huh, Stan? Have you counted? Have you drove around and counted how many people have bird feeders in their yards in your 600-home neighborhood? Guess what, Stan? That attracts rodents. Maybe you should concentrate on banning the bird feeders in your neighborhood, because the birds come in, they scatter the feed down onto the ground, and then guess what? Here come all the rodents. They're going to be eating all of that bird seed that the birds scatter on the ground. So maybe you should concentrate on banning bird feeders, which are attracting rodents. Have you ever thought about that, Stan? Okay. How about the dog bowl and cat bowl on the back deck? You don't think those aren't attracting rodents? I bet you have a heck of a lot more dogs in your community right now, Stan, than ever will be chickens, even if the law is passed, my friend. Okay, let's continue this on a little bit. Stan, have you walked through your neighborhood and looked at how many potted plants are on the front or back decks of your neighbor's homes? Guess what? A potted plant, of course, with those little reservoirs at the bottom, can be a water source for rodents. So there you go. Maybe we should ban wild bird feeders because they attract rodents in your neighborhood. And maybe we should go ahead and ban potted plants on people's front and backyards and decks decks because they that can be a water source for mice and rats. Oh, and by the way, one more thing, Stan. Just because you put chickens in an area does not mean that now all of a sudden you're going to have tons and tons of predators. Why? More than likely, if you have an issue with them, they are already there. Okay, if predators are there already, there's a food source for them there already. Okay, it's not like you're going to have Ma and Pa Raccoon 6 miles away say, "Hey, I heard the Smiths over in the subdivision over there just got some chickens. Let's head over there and snack out on those. Yeah, let's go. Let's head that way." No. If there are predators there, they're already there because there's already a food source there for them, whether it be your cats, your kittens, or whatever the case may be. Stan, if you don't think you already have mice and rats in your neighborhood, then let me tell you, you need to find a neighbor that has a cat because it probably leaves one or two a week at the back door of your neighbor. So this issue about the deal with rodents and grain and snakes and raccoons and possums and bobcats. Give me a break. It's totally and factually unfounded. And you have bigger issues if you're worried about rodents if you allow bird feeders in your neighborhood and potted plants, because that is a food and water source for the rats. Okay. Let's see. How do chicken raisers contain the offensive problems on their one-quarter acre parcel and not share them with the neighborhood? Impossible. I'm not sure what offensive problems you're talking about. We've already demythed most of those, Stan. So how do you contain them? Well, you have a small chicken coop for your 6 to 12 chickens. You have a run that is fenced in for your 6 to 12 chickens. And you could either have some poultry netting over the top. You could clip their wings so they don't fly out and get into your yard so your mean pit bull doesn't kill the chickens that happen to wander in your yard because you keep your pit bull loose and let it roam the neighborhood and poop in everybody's yard. So very easily, how do you get chicken raisers to contain the problems on their one-quarter acre lot? Very easily. Okay, Stan, let me explain something to you. I lived on a quarter acre lot. I had two goats. At one time, I had up to about 40 chickens. I had a garden, I had water barrels, I had a worm bin, I had a compost bin, I had a compost pile, I had two dogs, and people came from all around to look how it can be done very responsibly and not bother the neighbors on a quarter acre. Okay, Stan, so it can be done. I had the Atlanta Master Gardeners come out. I had the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, one of the largest papers in the country, come out and do a whole story on the quarter acre backyard chickens and how you can make it work and not bother your neighbors. So, Stan, do some more research. It can be done. Okay? How will the commissioners handle the increased number of complaints that are sure to follow? How many additional code enforcement officers will be required, and to what cost to the taxpayers? Stan, do your research. Call any city that's ever allowed backyard poultry and ask them how have the complaints increased. They have not. We know out in Longmont, Colorado, there's a story. You can Google it, Longmont. Chickens, not an issue. Google that. You'll find it. You'll find the story because it was in the paper. How they were having the same problems and having people say talk about the same problems you're accusing the backyard chicken community of having. And then now, 2 years later, they don't even exist. It's non-issue. Okay, but they still have a 19,000-20,000 complaints about dogs and about 4 for chickens. So no more code enforcement officers will be needed, and no more complaints than you already have. So that number 9, moot point, my friend. Okay, Stan, do a little bit more research. The unpermitted chicken coop built at 1513 Canal Place in Lee Acres now sits unsecured and unfinished. It was not constructed in accordance with Lee County wind requirements and standards. The code enforcement officers currently are not allowed to enforce the existing ordinances. The coop and its associated construction debris are potential missiles awaiting our first big blow. Will the commissioners accept legal responsibility for damages that may occur? The residence also houses a rooster, which violates all current ordinances. This folly must end. So that's where you go, Stan. You have to get them to go ahead, and they'll pass an ordinance to allow it, but they can ban the roosters like the majority of the towns that allow backyard chickens today. They ban the slaughter of chickens in the backyard, and they only are allowed to have hens. They're only allowed to have maybe 4 to 12, and then they have only so far from a property line or a neighbor's occupied dwelling, and they address all of these, and in all the cases, 95%, go and call them and research it. There's no more increased complaints. There's not an increase in code enforcement officers needed. So it says the code enforcement department is doing a splendid job, a thankless job. Each person that I have met or talked with has acted in a very professional manner. Lee County can be proud of them. We are also asking commissioners to unite their hands and allow them to do what we as taxpayers are paying for, enforcement. I sent a petition signed by more than 600 residents of Country Club Estates to Commissioner Frank Mann. I can only recall 4 residents that would not sign it. This is an overwhelming majority of 99.4% of residents against allowing chickens into residential neighborhoods. The people have spoken, and we vote. Okay? I want to remind you, Stan, if you do a little history and research, that America was designed to be a republic, not a democracy. Let me remind you that a democracy, Stan, and very careful, I know this may be a little over your head, but Stan, democracy is basically 2 wolves and 1 sheep deciding what's for dinner, okay? That's what a democracy is. It says, the people have spoken and we vote. Now it's up to the commissioners to end this fiasco for the law-abiding citizens of unincorporated Lee County. I have dealt only with facts. We know that's false, Stan. I just blew most of your facts out of the water, my friend. I have dealt with only facts and not emotions. We must not open the door. We must not open a door that we cannot close. Stan Damon is vice president of the Homeowners Association there. He lives on Archer Street in Lehigh Acres. So I just wanted to spend some time with that because, again, here's a guy that probably has never owned chickens himself. Here's a guy that's, he claims many of them may have lived on a farm growing up, or maybe they lived near a farm growing up. And it's a moot point, Stan, because we're not talking about a farm. We're talking about 3 to 6 chickens, maybe 12 at the most. That does not define or constitute a farm, my friend. So, if Stan, have you ever owned just 6 chickens yourself? To know the true facts about keeping them? No. Have you ever lived next to somebody that owned just 6 chickens and experienced that? Let me take a guess here. No. Okay. And I will end it by saying this. Okay. On any given day, I have more dog poop in my yard from other neighbors' dogs than they have ever had chicken poop in their yard from my chickens. On any given day, I have more cat prints on my car and scratches on my car from cats and cat poop in my garden from other neighbors' pesty cats than they have ever had chicken marks, chicken prints, or chicken poop in their yard or garden. And on any given day, Stan, I am awakened by barking dogs from other neighbors' dogs at 2 a.m. than they have ever, ever been awakened by my sleeping hens locked in their coop at night as they sleep through the night. Okay, Stan? So just take that and chew on it a little bit. So I wanted to share that with you. I may actually post this on our Facebook page, and I may even try to get Stan's mailing address. Maybe we can start a mailing campaign and send him a bunch of letters, and he says he used the facts, but obviously here just in the last few minutes, I blew all of his facts out of the water. So I think Stan needs to do a little bit more research on something he has no idea what he's talking about before he writes a letter to the editor, and it gets published all over the country in Google News Alerts. So I just wanted to share that. Pat, I had to read it today. I had to go on a little tangent. What do you think?
Well, I think you are very articulate and expressed all the facts and the issues really well. I mean, that's one of the things that changing the chicken image and just the blind prejudice about chickens and the false beliefs that people have, I think that's just part of our job here, Whisper. And you certainly were very, very articulate and clear today. Good job. Really good job.
I read that this morning. It was like 6:30, 7 o'clock. No, I take that back. I read that at 4:30 this morning when Caleb had woke up. He wanted his middle-of-the-night snack. So he's doing really good as far as the sleep. We've got him kind of on a schedule and whatnot, but I take that back. It was about 4:30. Jen woke me up. With her rustling around and getting him situated to feed him, 4:30, and I went over and grabbed my BlackBerry and started to see what any kind of news or emails I was getting, and I read that this morning at 4:30, and I saved it. I said, that is going to have to be read on the air today. So very, very interesting, and it's not the first time we've heard this. Our longtime listeners have heard this many, many times before, and they've heard my explanation of all this and Pat's explanation of all this many, many times before, but we do have new listeners all the time, and we have some people listening that are going through a battle like this, and so it's good to hear some of the great arguments that we can kick in. Again, many of y'all have been doing this a long time. I've been doing this a long time. I feel very confident that no matter what anybody can throw at us regarding backyard chickens, I can have a good, factual, and reasonable rebuttal that will blow anything out of the water that they could possibly come up with. So just what we do. We do this 24/7, 7 days a week versus Stan, who probably just wrote the letter after 5 minutes of research or what he thinks is factual information from his several years on this earth. So very interesting. All righty, Pat, we're going to go ahead and take a commercial break. And then we've got a great guest lined up today, let me tell you, and I thank you for that. We've got Don Schreider. Don worked on the Buckeye Recovery Project, and he teaches how to select breeding stock for production. So if we've got folks that out there that are looking to show their birds, they already show their birds, or maybe they just want a good quality flock in their backyard and they want to buy from well-known breeders across the country, this is the show for you. And so, Pat, I want to thank you for lining that up today on the 5th Wednesday. And I want to remind everybody that tomorrow being the 1st, can you believe it's September already, Pat? This is amazing.
No.
But I'm glad fall's going to be here. I really am. I like fall. And I'm really looking forward to the cooler temperatures and fall to arrive. But tomorrow we've got Dr. McCray, PhD, poultry scientist, professor, and small flock specialist will be here with us tomorrow. And then another fun Friday. I can't believe it's almost Friday. Hopefully we'll make it to then, and we'll have another good fun Friday and give some prizes away. So we're going to go to a commercial break now. And y'all stay with us, because when we come back, we're going to be talking about Buckeyes and other breeds and ways to select good breeding stock if that actually interests you, or you're looking to get a good quality flock, or maybe you show poultry. So stay with us. We'll be back right after this short break on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Looking for something? Find it online at Bidbird Auctions. Bidbird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made Bidbird Auctions their new home. And get sold on Bidbird. Need an incubator? Think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensey.com. Brensey spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensey.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg candlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensey. Technology you can trust.
Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com. VermexUSA.com. To see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex, natural control of intestinal parasites.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. So we had a good bit of little chickens in the news there we wanted to share with you, but now it's time to bring on our special guest. Of course, Pat is back live with us, and now Don, you're back live with us as well. Don, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, good to be back on.
Yes, absolutely. Welcome back, and you're sounding good. We've got good sound right now.
Yeah, hey, Don, welcome. Don, if perhaps maybe I can give you a little introduction so our folks really know how amazing and wonderful you are, which is pretty important. Our special guest today is Don Schreider. He is a nationally recognized poultry breeder and expert. He's written for all kinds of publications, including Backyard Poultry, Countryside Magazine, Small Stock Journal, Mother Earth News, Poultry Press, and, of course, he's very active with the ALBC, the American Five Stock Breeds Conservancy, and has been published in many of their newsletters. And, Don, I understand you're also writing a book about turkeys, and you are interested in hearing from anyone about their stories or a little vignettes, anything about turkeys from pets to professionals. And so, Don, thank you for coming on the show today.
I'm absolutely glad to be here. And just a little blurb, anybody that wants to contact me about their turkeys, just send an email to brownleghorn@gmail.com, and be happy to hear from you.
Yeah, and I'll post that in the chat room then. That's Brown Leghorn, B-R-O-W-N, leg, L-E-G-H-O-R-N, at gmail.com. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that book. I think there really needs to be a good book on turkeys, especially at the homestead level, I think. So that's but also about the emotional side of turkeys, Don. I'll talk to you later on about how we've had some turkeys that were pretty amazing individuals. So that's always brings a light to it.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, today you're going to tell us about how dual-purpose breeds, how to recognize them, how to select for them, and why even have them.
Yeah. The first thing I want to say is most of us think of dual-purpose breeds, obviously, as a breed that was designed for both meat and eggs, but we think of them as being all designed for the same purpose, and that's not true. They have very different body shapes from breed to breed, and the reason for that is they were selected for very different purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So a classic one are some of the American breeds, but you can take your classic Rhode Island Red. Most everybody's grandparents had Rhode Island Red. They didn't have barred rocks, and a very popular breed of chicken over the last 100 years, but one of the hallmarks of a Rhode Island Red is this long body shape. They say it's brick-like in proportions. It has a deep chest, but it's also very long across the back. And that breed was actually developed more for egg production for meat. It has more capacity in the rear of the chicken where the egg organs are located. So its lateral process bones leading up to the pelvic bones will be a little bit longer, and if you're feeling from the top of the chicken, you will actually feel more length behind the thighs going out the rear than in many other dual-purpose breeds. And another example of selection would be the New Hampshire Red. And either of you know what breeds are in the background of a New Hampshire Red?
I've heard that before, but it's not. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's a trick question. The only breed in the background of the New Hampshire Red is Rhode Island Red. And not meaning to trick anybody, but it's an interesting fact. Rhode Island Reds and New Hampshire Reds, New Hampshire Reds were just one line of birds that were selected for faster rate of growth. And what happened to the breed, they wanted hardiness, they wanted faster feathering, faster rate of growth. And what happened was those birds became much lighter in color. They are much faster in growing and maturing, but their body shape is no longer that long shape. And so they became more appropriate for meat, being more compact. A shorter breastbone means the bird, when dressed, looks much plumper. And the New Hampshires will actually grow to market in as early as 14 weeks, whereas the Rhode Island Reds will take more like 18 to 20 weeks to be ready for market. But the Rhode Island Reds will give you better egg production in the second and third and subsequent laying years than your typical New Hampshire.
The Rhode Island Reds, because of their long body shape, give better egg production. Is that, that's what you just said, wasn't it, Don?
That's correct, and they will be able to do it unless commercial companies don't care. They look for 1.5, about 18 months of egg production, but for those of us in the backyard, we'd like hens that are laying 4, 5, 7, 8, 9 years.
Uh-huh.
And having that extra length in the back end of the bird is actually an advantage for that.
Wow, absolutely, absolutely. Don, you had mentioned one time to me there was that you and Jim Atkins are actually teaching workshops on how to select breeds for your purpose, given the body type and that the form follows function. And you'd also talked about a book called Judging Poultry for Production that's kind of coming back a little bit more into vogue. You want to say a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, the real, really what we're talking about is the feathers cover up a lot of the characteristics of the body of the animal. And, you know, every farm boy and girl knows the difference between a dairy cow and a beef cow. They can look at a cow and tell. But essentially, it's different organs of the body have a little more capacity, and it tells you a bit more where the energy of the animal consumes in terms of feed is applied. And so with chickens, the feathers really cover up quite a lot. They don't let you see a lot of what's going on. I mean, most people don't even know how to tell if their chickens are too fat or too thin, and because they, you know, the feathers can make the birds look in good condition all the time. But what we learned started in the early 1900s. Walter Hogan wrote a book called The Call of the Hen, and what he was is a textile manufacturer that had a flock of backyard chickens. And he started wondering how he could tell which of his hens were the ones that were laying, and he started going out. Because he was sensitive with his hands from feeling cloth on the textile machines, he started feeling the skin of chickens. And what he learned was playing around with the bird as well. Of course, everybody knew the organs are in the back end of the bird, and he found out the hens that were laying well had more elastic skin and it was softer. He also found that they had more distance between the keel bone and the two pelvic bones, and more width between the pelvic bones, in fact, straight pelvic bones as opposed to pelvic bones that turn back towards each other like a pair of horns. And this is all right up there around the vent, so the back end of the chicken. And it's really his work that inspired a number of colleges, including some professors like Professor Rice that wrote Judging Poultry for Production. And all this stuff has a great deal of science behind it and study behind it in the early 1900s. And in fact, it led to America's average of having average of 75 eggs per hen per year to popping well over 150.
I got the book now up on Amazon, The Call of the Hen, or The Science of the Selection and Breeding of the Poultry for Egg Production, and it's $14 there on Amazon. So if you're interested, you can listening and you're interested, you can look that up on Amazon and order that.
Yeah, and Rice's book, Judging Poultry for Production, is a book that follows that. It's also quite excellent if you're hungry for more.
Great.
But what Jim's been doing, of course, he's been on here, but he's organized a number of different groups of people around mostly down in North Carolina area as well. And I've been going down and doing some hands-on selection. Most people can get this, and in fact, I wrote with Jeanette Berenger, I wrote some how-tos that's on the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy website, which you can follow, download. It's a free PDF. But it's easy enough to do, but it's the kind of thing that once you do it with somebody, it removes your doubt about the birds that are really middle of the road. Anybody can find a good one or a bad one, but it's where you draw the line, I think, that between good and bad that confuses most people. But I remember when Jeanette and I were working on the Buckeye project, we went out to one farmer, and he was raising the Buckeyes, and we called through those. And then he asked us, he said, "Can you tell me how to tell if a hen's laying or not?" He had quite a large flock of hens, but he wasn't getting a large number of eggs, and so we told him, you know, how to feel the elastic nature of the skin, and check the pelvic and keel spreads, and he went out on his own and went through his flock and pulled, I think it was 30 hens out, and put them in a separate area, and in a week's time, he got something like 5 eggs out of those 30 hens. And knew he, his first try, no problem, he figured out which hens were laying and which were not.
Awesome. That's impressive.
So.
That's definitely a backyard skill every flock owner ought to have if you're going to be keeping it or raising any of your birds.
Yeah, and not all your listeners are going to want to cull any of their chickens. They may have 5 or 7 hens or 3, and they may be as much pets as anything else, but learning how to feel the body of the chicken is great to figure out what condition they're in to adjust the feed to get them in really ideal condition. And with livestock, most of us know that fat is laid on either side of the spine. So an animal, when you feel the back of a cow or a goat or a sheep, where there's a dip where the spine should be, the fat on either side is now taller than the spine. And when the animals bend, which means grossly fat, of course, and when the animal's thin, the spine will feel like mountain peaks. And ideal breeding condition is usually where you can feel the spine, but it feels like little hills instead of a mountain, say. Well, with a chicken or duck or goose, the telltale's not the back because the spine's fused with other bones in there. So you don't really have much that you can feel, but the telltale is actually the 2 pelvic bones. They stick out the back of the bird like 2 fingers, if you will, and when you squeeze them left to right individually, you can feel how thick that feels to you. And when a hen's thin, it'll feel about 1/8 of an inch thick. And when a hen's overly fat, it'll feel 1/2 inch or 3/4 of an inch thick, and it'll have a loose blob of fat that you can feel on there. And so that's a pretty easy way to know if you're giving your girls a little too many treats or not enough.
Huh. John, did you say when the hen is thin, it'll feel like it's about 1/8 of an inch, the little pelvic bones individually? Is that right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the reason for that is also when the chicken is laying, one thing we forget is egg laying is very similar to giving birth, except chickens do it every day. And if we think about what happens when a mammal gives birth, we've got higher hormone levels, which tend to elongate and make elastic the skin. And so the hen, of course, her vent will get larger when she's laying eggs. But that whole area of skin will become longer, thinner, and softer, which means even around the pelvic bones, it'll be a little softer and thinner so that you can squeeze down to really just the bone. And when a hen is not laying, her skin contracts and gets tougher, and so it'll feel thicker, plus you add fat and gristle underneath of that as she's putting her energy into fat instead of egg laying, and then you can feel that it feels much thicker, like 1/2 inch or even 3/4 of an inch thick on grossly fat hens.
Wow, and that's around the pelvic bone, the 3/4 of an inch, right?
Yeah, the two pelvic bones, which will be just below your vent. So if you can locate the vent of the bird and you feel two protuberances directly below it, and the third one all the way down at the bottom is the tip of the keel bone. And those are the bones in the back of the bird. That's really called the abdomen of the bird, but it's the back end for most of us from sight.
Uh-huh. Don, while we're talking about the pelvic bones, that's Carl Mogensen at the Natural Bridge Zoo told me that's one of the best ways to determine whether it's a male or a female by the pelvic bones. He said, don't even look at the feathers, just feel the bones. Is that how you would agree with that?
No.
No? Okay.
It might work for him, but that's one of those things where everything would have to be the same age. You know, if it's an adult bird, sure, a hen and lay is going to have a much greater distance between pelvic bones, and especially between the pelvic bones and the keel bone, the tip of the keel bone.
Yeah, we were talking about adult birds. That's, of course, by then you should know, shouldn't you? But,
yeah. Yeah, sure, you know, that works in adult birds. But the problem is if you've got an old hen that hasn't laid in a while, she's going to be much tighter. Again, those hormones that cause the skin to get elongated and elastic in nature also cause the egg organs to swell, which is why the distance between the two pelvic bones and the tip of the keel bone increases in size on a hen that's in egg production.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But anyway, these are used to be
I'm
back in
I'm taking notes. That's why I've got 3 pages of notes here already, Don. Go ahead.
Maybe
this
I better shut up.
No, keep going, keep going.
I don't want to kill trees or anything. But, there used to be back in the early 1900s, like 1910s, 1920s, there used to be trains sponsored by the colleges and government experiment stations that went around and taught hands-on poultry judging to people. And you used to be able to organize a group of people in your area. This train of experts would come in your town, and they'd go through a flock of birds and spend a day with you and go through all this stuff. And what Jim and I have been trying to do is actually get out there and sort of do the same thing. Our train is, of course, just vehicles, and what we do is we drive down, and a lot of times we have something organized in conjunction with, like, an organic conference or something like that. But these hands-on selection criteria, there's so many people getting into poultry now, and they want to know how to do this stuff, and it really helps, especially for the guys and gals that want to produce food, whether it's eggs or eggs and meat from their flock of chickens, maybe even to offer as part of a CSA. So I think there's a little renaissance going on.
And then what do they do to just contact you to arrange it, or are you going to do another tour? Do you have sponsors to send you around the country?
Yeah, we don't have sponsors, although if you want a sponsor, that's great. But a lot of what we've done has been through different venues. So, like last year, I went to Mother Earth News's first fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Mother Earth News invited me out to that. I did something for the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy's conference. Did the Organic Growers School in Nashville, North Carolina, this year. And then there's a group of growers that were associated with that. Specifically, the Jim's been mentoring all year long, he living down there, and they want, in fact, a couple of weeks I'm going down, we're going to do an advanced class, which we haven't done yet, and so we've dealt with the basics, the hands-on and all, and much to my surprise, Jim announced the other day that I was going to be spending the day culling two flocks, one of buckeyes and one of brown leghorns, both of which I supplied the breeding stock for, so
got it'll be all home week, won't it?
I got to prove my salt on my own bloodline, so but that'll be great fun.
Well, that's a tribute to your efforts there to be able to go back to the family flock and now see the sort of the fruits of your labor from those little eggs in that initial Buckeye Recovery Project. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's really rewarding to see how well Buckeyes are doing, how popular they've become, and that breed really deserved it. It was really fast disappearing, and if it wasn't for a few diehards like Dwayne Urch, who is connected with a lot of really rare breeds, Buckeyes might have disappeared in the last 30 years.
But, yes.
Two of us have taken up the mantle, and once people get them, they love them.
They're very personable. I've had a couple of Buckeyes, and I really like them. They're wonderful rangers. I mean, they will go out foraging farther than I kind of want them to go, but they always seem to come back. They've got kind of a streetwise way about them, too, that's, you know, with the predators.
Yeah, and I think they're not the only great breed out there. I don't want to just promote Buckeyes alone. I'd rather not have Buckeyes become popular and something else go nearly extinct.
Right.
People always ask me what breed is best, and of course the correct answer is brown leghorn. For those of you that don't know what I've been known for. But the real correct answer is how the heck do I know what breed you're going to enjoy best? I'll just give one little example. I tried Jersey Giants one year. I had some really good Jersey Giants from a friend of mine that breeds them. I was just impressed with their size, and I was thinking this was going to be another breed for me. And I got them, and one morning in particular stands out. I opened the coop door to let the chickens out for the morning, and the leghorns come racing out, flapping their wings, leaping into the air, and you know, running about 100 feet away, just dancing, jumping up and down. You ever see chickens dance, you know what I mean? And the Jersey Giants hopped out the door, stood there, still as a statue. I looked down at one. It looked, turned its head, kind of cocked its head, looked at me. And I looked at it and said, are you even alive? They weren't right for me. The leghorns suit my temperament better. But not everybody likes the active nature of leghorns. And so maybe that's why Buckeyes work for me, too, because they're so active. So if they're not right for you, there's another breed that needs you.
Well, and there, it's some of us, me personally, I really like having that eye candy flock where they all, I can tell them all as individuals, and there aren't so many that they all look alike. But there are some that are better for certain climates, of course. We've gone over that. There's a question in the chat room, Don, and it's, let's read it here. Let me get back to the, and I think I know the answer, but let you answer it. He goes, this is from Midnight, and he has a chicken that is in the box and apparently can't lay. And they noticed that Friday night, but she wouldn't get off the nest. They got an egg. And that now, when they take her off the box or lock her away from it, she's normal. She eats, she drinks, she does her normal chicken thing. But when she goes back in the nest box, she just wants to stay there and screams at them when they let her out. She's only 7 months old. Is it possible that this young of a chicken could want to go broody already?
Sure, sounds like it.
Doesn't it?
It's unusual, very unusual, but, you know, that sounds like broodiness, and a female that young exhibiting those particular tendencies, wow, that hen's got a future as a broody. Do they want to get rid of her?
Midnight, if you could let us know what breed it is, what breed of chicken is doing this, just type it in the chat room. Yeah.
Yeah, but it does sound like early onset of maternal tendencies, characteristics. So I would say that that chicken may be a little challenge as far as to keep her in egg production, but I do believe many more of us need to get into raising our own chicks under hens again. But
yes.
A hen like that certainly is worth her feed.
Yeah. Kind of an odd time of the year to go broody, though. I mean, it's a tough time to be born in the winter. You know, so if you can, do you have any advice about how to get her unbroody? Because
well,
I'm not sure I'd want to set the eggs this time of year.
Yeah, the big thing about getting a hen on broody is you got to get them removed from a place where they can feel comfortable. So some of the best examples of doing that is having another pen. I have a friend that has a rabbit cage. So he put no nesting box in a wire-bottomed rabbit cage and set the chicken in there. And the cool air coming up underneath of her so she doesn't feel that radiated heat that she gets when she's sitting on the nest helps. And you don't put a nesting box in there so she doesn't have that secure hidden away feeling that they look for when brooding. But you give them a week or so like that, and you notice them stopping clucking and getting over it. I will sometimes throw them in a pen with an individual male with no nesting box, and within a few days they give up the broodiness. There, the male will keep her from sitting around in a corner or any for too long, and so I find that breaks the broodiness more quickly.
That sounds cruel to me, Don. That's like poultry sexual harassment. If there are chicken rights.
Well, I don't know.
But it does work. I've heard other people.
It does work. But the essentials there are the same thing. It's an area without a nesting box and where she's not allowed to get comfortable and feel secluded.
Right. 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 Yeah. Very good. Very good. Whisper, shall we take a short break? Do we need a?
Yeah, that sounds like a plan. No problem. We'll take a commercial break, and then when we return, we'll finish up the radio show. And I want to thank you all for tuning in today to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We'll be back right after this short break. Since 1985, Meyer Hatchery in Polk, Ohio has been a family-owned and operated business. Meyer Hatchery is a year-round hatchery that offers over 160 breeds of poultry, including chickens, ducks, geese, turkeys, guineas, peafowl, and game birds, plus a full line of feed and supplies. Just need a few baby chicks? No problem. Meyer Hatchery will ship as few as 3 baby chicks. Check them out online at MeyerHatchery.com. That's MeyerHatchery.com. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com.
You've ordered your new baby chicks,
and even have the brooder prepared. But now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size, flock, and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com.
Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com, V-E-R-M-X-USA.com, to see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex, natural control of intestinal parasites.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
If you're looking for a unique gift idea for that dog, cat, horse, or chicken lover, then look no further than HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a wide selection of gifts for both the home and farm. My favorite is the chicken noodle soup with noodles shaped like chickens. I'm sure you'll find everything you're looking for at HobbyHillFarm.com. That's HobbyHillFarm.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And of course, today we're very proud to have as a guest today Don Schrider. He's worked on the Buckeye Recovery Project. He also does a lot of work with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. And today he's talking all about selective breeding stock for production. Pat, welcome back. You're live. And Don, you're back live as well.
Okay. Great.
Wonderful. And we can wrap up. Listen, we got about 9 minutes, so anything you were hoping maybe to cover today, Don or Pat, and we can wrap it up with that. Actually, we probably have about 7 minutes after we got to spend a couple of time wrapping the show up. But anything, Don, you had in your mind about today's show that we haven't covered, or Pat, anything you wanted to hear?
Ladies first.
Yeah. Don, go ahead. And if you want to tell us a little bit about your forthcoming turkey book, that would be fine,
yes,
too.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm rewriting Story's Guide to Raising Turkeys, and we're trying to put a lot more information in it that will be pertinent to raising them on smaller, large scale on pasture and in backyards and such. So we'll see how that turns out. The book itself, we hope to have finished this December, and then it'll be about next December by the time it'll be out. They've got, you know, of course, photographs and drawings and the whole publication process to go through all next year. So,
it is quite a process, isn't it, Whisper?
It's always a process. Yeah, my latest story was I received the first copy of the book and said, hey, you've got 30 days to review. If you need to make any changes, get them to us in 30 days. And then 2 weeks after that, I started getting emails. Hey, I received your book today. I'm like, and then of course, I call the publisher and I'm like, what's up with this? Y'all gave me 30 days, 2 weeks, 15 days later, people are getting my book. What gives? And then, of course, I don't know if this was factual information or just to shoo me aside, but it was, well, that's for the next edition. So when we need to do updates for the next printing, we'll have those available if need be. Yeah, right. So yeah, I can't say it's a love hate. I think it's a hate relationship between an author and their publisher. A hate relationship.
Oh my! I have to tell you, Whisper. I did send in that endorsement that we talked about, and they said they could probably use it later. But it was a little too late to get it in there. That was right after we met up there in Stanton. So eventually, maybe on a later edition, you'll see my endorsement.
Maybe so. I know some other folks wrote one too, and there weren't any inside cover and back cover, but oh well. What are you gonna do? So, yeah. In fact, I think give me a second, guys, because I think I've got my email open, and actually, it's not in my email. It's over here under a file radio show. We're supposed to be having a show about turkeys with Dr. McCray. If I can get this file open and see. And it should be sometime this summer. I may have missed it. I don't see it on our calendar, but we were supposed to have it. It may have already actually passed. I thought it was going to be sometime this summer about getting, if you wanted to have your own turkeys for Thanksgiving or Christmas, when to actually start those. So
yes.
They'll be
we,
ready
we
to
did that in the spring.
Yeah, and we did, and I know that we were going to do it again this summer when we were actually, and then follow it through with about, okay, you got your turkeys, and then this is what we need to do. This is where we're changing feed now. So I'll talk to Dr. McCray maybe later today and see if it's too late to start. Probably is, but we'll just have to see because we were going to do that again this summer about raising turkeys for Christmas and a Thanksgiving. So, oh well. One of those things. Actually, I see July 7th we were supposed to do, and we were probably doing something for the holiday, Christmas in July, holiday poultry planning. So maybe we didn't have that show after all. Maybe that was during a time where we were traveling. But either way. But Don, looking forward to your book and continue all your good work and good works with the ALBC. It's always good to have you on the radio show with all your sharing all your knowledge with all of our listeners, and we appreciate your time to come on and share that with us.
It's a pleasure to be on. And just like I say, if any of your listeners have some tips on their turkeys or some stories they'd like to share about their pet turkeys or production turkeys, I'd be more than happy to hear from them. My greatest joy would be if, in writing this book, it gives people some tools so that turkeys can become more popular, just as chickens have.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Well, we'll certainly follow it along the way, Don, and ask a little further down the road if any people do have more stories or turkey tales that they could share with you. So that's great. Keep up the great work, Don. You're just doing fabulous work, and it's a true service to our country as well as to the poultry owners. So thank you for what you do.
Absolutely. And you're welcome on the show anytime. Anytime you have a new news, or you're ready to release the book, or a new project, or new findings, definitely give us a call. You're always welcome.
That sounds great.
Very
my
good.
Pleasure.
Thanks for coming on. All righty, Pat. Well, another great show has now passed, and tomorrow we'll welcome Dr. Bridget McCray, PhD, poultry scientist, with a topic. And, of course, silly me, I've already closed what the topic would have been tomorrow, so I'll post it on Facebook. It was right there in front of me, but I was concentrating on raising turkeys for the holidays. And then, of course, another fun Friday this Friday. Hope all of our listeners enjoyed the show today and enjoyed the chat room. And you can continue to follow us at chickenwhisperer.com and, of course, on Facebook and on Twitter, where we post a lot of our chickens news and updates and posts and contests and other things where you can win great prizes on Facebook and Twitter as well. So hope you enjoyed the show. Pat, thanks for joining us. Thanks for lining up Don. That was a fabulous show. And thank Don for coming on with such short notice. And we will continue. And wow, tomorrow, well, Pat, I guess I'll see you next month.
That's right. Oh, I'll see you next month. September already. Unbelievable.
Telling you what. Okay, let's wrap it up, Pat. Go ahead, my friend.
Okay, thanks, Whisper. Well, our special guest today was Don Schreiner. He is a nationally recognized poultry breeder and expert and author of the soon-to-be How to Raise Turkeys, and author of so many articles. Just Google Don, and you'll find just a whole bunch of the articles that he's written. Appreciation to our chat room chicken ears and all our listeners for tuning in. And blogtalkradio.com provides the radio, the chat, and the video services. Andy Schneider is the Chicken Whisperer and, of course, the creator of this show and the wind under our wings. Thank you, Andy. I'm Pat Forman, and from all of us, from absolutely all of us, may the flock be with you. Close the chicken evermore. God bless everybody.